You're listening to WWBC, Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard on the World Wide Web all over God's magnificent planet.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, also there, we also archive all the shows, so you'll be able to pick any Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and look at those. Of course, we share all of those podcasts and everything on our social media, as well as our website, which is cedamediainc.com. And of course, each week we get anywhere from 15 to 18,000 downloads. So thank you so much for all of the listeners out there and all of the faithful subscribers that have been listening to the show. And again, on all the social media and all the website, you can actually search by topic. So we've had so many great topics, especially lately. I mean, it seems like everybody is really doing their part in saving the world.
Yeah.
I'm loving it.
It is. God is good. For listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, on Mondays for the past 15 and a half years, I cannot believe when we started this show, I was a size six. I was a size 4 to 6. Now I'm like a 10, which is okay. I still look decent for 62.
There you do.
Tooting my own horn. And so on Mondays, we sit here with my wonderful co-host, Ellen O'Neill. Ellen's been with the show for 15 and a half years as well. What a wonderful friend. And she actually incorporates this in part of her life. We have Ali Tambor is here. She is a good friend of our show that comes by and sits with us and cheers us on. And of course, we have Danny Whiting, who is running our board. And we thank Kim Cassius, the owner of our station, for giving us an opportunity to be on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We do know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and we play nice on the radio.
Yes.
And today we have a wonderful friend. Our friend Anne Morose is here. I hope I said it right. Look at that.
Correct.
Anne is going to be on second segment. Anne Morose is an RN with more than 40 years of clinical practice. She's a stroke certified RN and has specialized in the stroke arena for the past 20 years. And of course, being a nurse, and Anne is also a nurse. This is Stroke Awareness Month, and we're going to talk a little bit about the signs and symptoms of a stroke, prevention, people we know that had strokes and give us their opinions afterwards, and what we can do to help our citizens here in the United States and around the world to eat right, exercise, diet, and do what they can to promote less strokes and less hypertension, whatever. Our first segment... You know, I'm always scrolling on Facebook and TikTok and all these places to get good guests for a show. And Ellen, I'm not sure if you're on TikTok yet, but there's a woman on TikTok. Her name is Jody Brown. And she's the founder and the principal of these tiny houses. And I was looking at her video and she had like a lot of views. I don't want to be inaccurate, but I think she got hundreds of thousands of views. And it was about a tiny house. And people were talking to her, and a lot of people agreed with that. And they were talking about less mortgages and less electric bills. And
I'm totally on the program.
No HOA and all that. And so I invited her, and I've rescheduled her a few times, and she didn't know what we were going to talk about. And she reached out, and then I'm like, we're talking about exactly what you talk about, you know, on your your videos. So I think she's on the phone, and we're going to say good morning to Jody Brown. And Jody, you're one of the folks that we chose to call in on our show today. Thank
good
you.
Morning.
And tell
can
us,
you hear me?
Yes. Where are you calling in from?
I am in Pensacola, Florida today, up in the panhandle, right on the border.
Geez, you could have just come and sit with us. Just kidding.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know if you got a chance to take a look at our website, but we give folks a platform.
I listened to a couple of your shows.
Oh, wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful. So we talk to people, you know, financial literacy, mortgages, writing a book, not writing a book, advocacy for clean air, water, sunshine, whatever it is, we give people a voice. And tell us a little bit about that video that you got all those views about that pretty much put you as one of these TikTok stars there.
Yeah, I was surprised as you were, Sita, trust me. I started my channel in mid-October, and in late November, I posted just a quick story about, like, what are you going to do about where you're going to live? You know, I'm getting older. I got to start thinking about these things. I shared my fantasy. I do not, you know, just to be clear, I don't make or promote or have a tiny house community or anything like that yet.
Yes.
But I shared in that video, you know, my fantasy has always been that I was going to get a little piece of land. I was going to, you know, create 5 or 6 spots for people to come and park their tiny houses with me. We'd all have our separate space, but we'd live in community and we would help each other. I'm an avid gardener. I love to grow my own food. You know, it was my vision for my long-term retirement. And the reason that I wanted to do this was I wanted to be able to create some space for affordable living for people, but also create a little bit of income for myself through rentals and on spaces so that I could supplement my Social Security, because I don't have a bigger plan other than Social Security. So that's what I shared in my video. And 3 million views later, no joke, 3 million views between TikTok and Instagram, everybody was talking about it. What they're going to do, how they're going to live. Everybody's very excited about the possibility of it. But unfortunately, in this country, it is really hard to establish tiny house communities. And one of the reasons is because nobody knows what they are. They don't know how to classify them. They don't basically know how to tax them, Sita.
Yes.
That's what it boils down to. They don't know how to tax them. You can park tiny houses in land or pieces of property that are designated for RVs. You know what I mean? You can park them there, but they have to be zoned that initially.
And you have to have a permit, right? You have to have a permit for that.
Well, and it's different in every municipality. And I'll tell you a very brief story about why this is such a challenge. I met a woman during COVID. I did a lot of studying on this during COVID when we had downtime. She had started exactly what I was looking for. She had 5 little houses on this piece of land, and she was in Southwest Louisiana. I said, can I come see you? And she said, absolutely. So what she told me when I went out there was that she had was looking to buy a piece of land in the town next to where she was currently built. Before she bought it, she went into town hall and said, this is what I want to do with it. Can I do it with this lot of land? And they said, absolutely not. And she said, so she went to the next town, looked for land, went to them with the same proposition, and they said, we don't know anything about that. We would love to create regulations for that.
Well, you know why? Because there's no money for the contractors in tiny homes. What it is
exactly
the consumer's benefit, because you don't have a mortgage. You probably have less bills. You can have your own garden. You can have a community. And you could have, yep, you know, people sitting around playing music in the evenings and everyone having a barbecue. And it's kind of like a vacation for the rest of your life.
You can buy a home on Amazon right now for $30,000.
But the municipalities, every single town has different rules and regulations depending on where it is. And for many of them, they don't know how to even step into the conversation.
Well, what's weird is if you went to the same city council meeting or the same state representative or the same senator, and you say that instead of building the tiny houses, that each person has an independent living, if you say, I'm just going to put up an apartment building, oh, yeah, they'll say yes to that because they make money off of that. Taxes, insurance, you know, landscaping, that kind of stuff. But when you say you want to do something that would help people and make it an affordable living and a great lifestyle where it's a community, I mean, we all talk about how we want to take care of the elderly and the children and our neighbors and be thy brothers, sisters, and brothers keeper and all that. But when you come up with a great idea like this, there's a lot of pushback. Now, why do you think there's a lot of pushback? Is it because of the zoning laws, or what is it?
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story. There is a woman on Instagram that I've been following, and I've been helping her a little bit. Her handle is Ms. Bohemian Soul, ms.bohemiansoul. And she has been working with a national construction association to try and get baseline stuff integrated into their, you know, their vernacular, so that there can be a standard across the country for what they are and what they do. And she has worked tirelessly, been back, gotten petitions signed, everything. And she just went back to make her final presentation to them last week. And there are a bunch of old white men who want to be, you know, in control of the exactly what you said, the money, the no construction companies involved. You know, they want to control everything, and they denied her ability to get this thing instituted. And it's, we're breaking social norms, and the people who have their hands in the pot deep don't want any of us to take their hand out of it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, but you know what? I've been reading that. So the people who have these tiny homes, it's significant financial freedom for these folks, because you have zero mortgage, and you increase your own savings because you're able to save. How much does these tiny houses cost, and is there like a weight limit? And a question that someone asked me to ask you: what happens with septic and sewer and all that? Because all those things have to be factored in when you decide to have a tiny home.
They do. And if I were to be building a place where people could park their tiny house, I would have electricity and I would have sewer at each concrete pad where they could pull on. That's what I would do, because a lot of people live in tiny houses off grid, and they have composting toilets and they collect their own water. But see, the conundrum with that, and when I started looking at this stuff 10 years ago, I saw people buy little pieces of land and they would get off grid.
Hey, Jody, we're losing you. If you could get closer to the phone, we're losing you.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So can you hear me now?
Yes.
And hold still.
Yeah. Ali said, now Ellen made a good point. She said you could buy a tiny home on Amazon for $30,000.
Well, for anywhere from $20,000 up to $150,000,
depending on, you know, the size of it. Yeah. All right. Jody, wherever you were before, go back to there, because we're losing your signal. You start breaking in and out.
I have not moved at all, ma'am.
Okay. I'm just saying that it's coming in and out.
I have not moved, and I've got my headset on and my microphone.
It could be the headset.
That's the best I can do.
Yeah, it could be.
Can you hear me?
So when you're thinking about building a tiny home, do you have to find someone who has proper credentials? What is the what is the process to build one? And usually how large are they? And is it like a one bedroom apartment?
Well, they range in size. Most of them, to be street legal, can only be 8.5 feet wide. You can go 10 feet, but then you have to have special permits to transport it. And most people, the varying size would be 8.5 by 24, 28, 30, 32, 40, depending on, it's almost like a shipping container size.
Gotcha.
Because those are roadworthy too, right? So if you can get that in your head, the distance is 13.5 feet, so that you can clear all the bridges and things like that on the road. So depending on what you need, some people get them long enough so that they can put their bedroom on the first floor. Some people put them in loft. They differentiate between you know, what your lifestyle you're looking for. As we get older, most of us want to have you know, single floor living.
Right.
But they can be highly customized or they can be really inexpensive. I've seen a lot of self builds. I've seen people salvage a lot of the inside might only be like 280 square feet. So you don't need a lot of stuff. So you can buy lots of bits and pieces of things that Christianity Restore or thrift stores, places where, you know, off of Facebook Marketplace. I can't tell how many people I have watched buy cheap things off of Facebook Marketplace and put it together.
Yeah.
Now, when you you may want it to be certified,
right?
Which is what you asked about.
Yes,
so
yes.
You can get it certified by, you know, have the electricity the right to get that certified, and then it will make it easier to sell. But if you're building it for yourself and you're confident in what you're doing, then you can go ahead and do it. It's, will the municipality allow you to park it where you want to park it? That's the number one problem. It's not the construction or the viability of the buildings themselves. It's like, where can you park it?
Right. Well, I think so I was telling a lady at work that we were going to have a show about the tiny house, and I told her who you were, and that you had 3 million views on your TikTok about tiny houses. And she said, well, you know, she thought that the mobile home parks was sort of kind of like a community of tiny homes, because you have, you know, some of those mobile homes that are one bedroom, some are two, some are three. And they're here in Florida, as you know, there's so many 55 plus. So I guess the difference would be that they are able to, they pay taxes, they have homeowners insurance, they have to have lawn upkeep, and it is expensive because the lots for those mobile homes are expensive. So with a tiny home, I guess there won't be a lot rental fee because you're moving around the United States?
Well, you're not moving around. It's just deciding where you want to park it. So here's an example. There's an RV park in Texas that I have been looking at for a while, and they have people who come and go. But in the back, they have long-term residents who just want a tiny house, but they want to plant it somewhere for a while, which is why I want it. I have always wanted to be able to have my own house, and if, God forbid, something happened and I have to move and go be near family or something, I can take that house with me. I don't have to worry about not having a house.
Now, that's interesting.
Throwing me out.
That's interesting.
That's my choice. That's something that's important to me. And that's why I want it to be mobile.
Right. And you save a lot of money not having to stay in hotels or stay with your family, in a, you know, if there's not enough space. But are these houses then, are they zoned like an RV, a park model, or ADU? What would be the right term for one that you are moving around with?
Right now, it's on a trailer. If it's on a trailer, then it needs to be registered like an RV. That's how they're going to tax.
Yeah, we're losing you again.
Have a registration on it right now. You've got to have a registration on it. Right?
Yes. So Jody, is there a need for a community of tiny homes right now? Because I noticed you are going all over the United States because people are calling you to come and speak, and thank you so much for doing that. You're mentoring a lot of people and coaching a lot of people, and you have great advice. When you go around the country, are you finding that there is a need for this because it is cost effective?
It's rampant. But let me tell you this. I was out in Santa Fe 3 weeks ago. I went to a Golden Girl event that they were having. It was a roundtable discussion. There were 11 of us in this cohort. The person hosting it owns the Modern Elder Academy, which is this huge facility. He has a 2,600-acre ranch in Santa Fe, and the local municipality has given him a hard time putting 7 tiny houses on the property.
That's beautiful. And can a family of 4 live in these? Because, you know, I am from the Caribbean. I'm from the islands. And when people get married over there and they don't have a plot of land or they don't have any kind of money, what they do is their parents would say, okay, take a little piece of land in the back of the house. And before you know it, they've got a little house put up there with it's like a one bedroom. They have a bed. They have a little sink. They have a little latrine in the back. And they lived there for years in that little home. And you know what? They're very resourceful. They have clotheslines and a barrel, and they get a little electricity from the main house. But the people live independently. I'm beginning to think you have a little bit of the island genes in you, Jody Brown.
Oh, I do, girl. Trust me. I've spent quite a bit of time in the islands.
Yeah, if you know what. So you know what I'm saying? If you go to Barbados or Trinidad or St. Kitts, Anguilla, all these places, Trinidad and Tobago, you know, Jamaica, you see the large houses. And then in the back, you'll see a very tiny one. And most likely it is a family member that just got some board, got some, you know, post. The most important thing is the foundation. And they lived there for years upon years. So I'm wondering if, I mean, we're watching in the United States the affordability crisis. People can't afford health care. People are screaming now they can't afford groceries. I mean, it's like life is a business from the minute you wake up to the minute God takes you home, right? And a lot of people are complaining. Uh-huh. So as you go around the country, what are people telling you is their main concern for wanting to downsize and become a minimalist and look into sustainability and saving our environment?
Affordability. I mean, literally, like where I live right now in Pensacola, we're one of the cities in Florida that is booming post-COVID, and it's just booming. I can't rent a studio apartment for less than $1,500 a month. That's just renting the apartment. That doesn't include getting my electricity, which you know is all over the place in Florida right now. The electric bills are insane. It's not getting internet into the house. It's not anything, just flat rent. So if you're in a fixed income and you're looking at just housing being about, you know, $1,750 to $2,000 a month, that doesn't include your car or your medical costs or any of those things. We're looking at people on entering into a fixed income situation where their monthly costs are going to be between, you know, $300 and $3,500 a month. I don't know a lot of retirees that are in that zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're suffering. A lot of people. I mean, I'm a elderly care nurse. I work in a nursing facility, and I've been a nurse for over 35 years. And I hear stories from people about their children, themselves, and how much they have to cut back on. But, you know, we used to hear so much about people living off the grid. And folks used to scoff at that idea, right? They would think, oh, there's a bearded guy in a little cabin somewhere in the woods. And, you know, he's living off the land and he's going to bed at 6 o'clock when the sun goes down and he wakes up in the morning and fish. But the thing is, it's becoming normal for people to live off the grid.
Yep. It is. But here's the conundrum. When I started following these stories about 10, 12 years ago, there were people that were getting off the grid, and then the municipalities were trying, and this isn't across the board. These are just some examples I saw. The municipalities taxing them for not using the grid infrastructure that somebody else already paid for. So they don't want a mass exodus off the grid either, because somebody's spent a lot of money to put all that stuff in play. So they were trying to tax people who were getting off the grid.
Wow.
That's crazy. And then the other conundrum we have, which no one is talking about, and Florida better wake up soon and realize this, is that private equity is snapping up all of these RV parks that are all over Florida. They're buying them, they're jacking up the rents, and then people who have lived in these, say, RVs for, you know, like you said, the ones that, you know, they have infrastructure, they've lived there for 20, 30 years. They're quote unquote mobile, but they can't afford to take them out of there and move them someplace else. So they're being displaced by private equity, who sees that these places are cash cows, the rent and everything.
Well, it's always about money, right? So pretty soon they might tax people for taking their little fishing boat out and catching a few fish and coming back and say, hey, we'll wait and you see how much you caught, because we're going to tax you based on how much
Absolutely.
You're going to eat. I'm telling you, I can see that coming down the pipe, because, you know, there's I speak with a lot of people, you know, about our show and what we're doing here. And folks are very concerned about everything being taxed to death.
Yep.
You know,
it's not going to stop going up. I mean, look at what's happening right now globally. You know, we're going to continue to get taxed as all these prices go up. We're going to continue to be taxed more because things are going to cost more.
Absolutely. So
it's terrifying.
So I have a quick question for you. These tiny homes, of course, you know, if you're from the Caribbean, you're used to the heat. and you could put on an air condition, and you could put on, I mean, you could put on a fan. All of a sudden, you know, the minute I watched your video, of course, the phones are like spies. Then all of a sudden, I start getting these things on my phone, little tiny air conditioners, solar air conditioning, insulation for tiny homes. And I'm like, what the? You know, but I guess because I was watching the video. So how do you stay insulated in these homes? Because we still live in Florida. It's hot. And then in some other states, it's cold. So not everybody.
They're built like tiny houses. They're small homes. They have insulation. They have electrical. They have plumbing. They have all the infrastructure. It's just smaller.
Yeah. Well, Ellen wants to have a village. Tell her your vision, Miss Ellen.
Well, I have the exact same village, and friends of mine have all like kind of committed. So we've decided on 10 acres, and each person's going to get an acre, and we're going to have a community area that we're going to grow our own food and have sort of a pool and a camp, you know, sort of a campground, you know, central
vibe.
Meeting
yep.
place, if you will. But yeah, from
where are you going to do it though? I think it's a great idea.
It's in Malabar, Florida, and Malabar has got lots of land, still a lot of undeveloped land, and Malabar happens to be in a city area where all they want is they want to be inspected because of hurricane inspections because mm-hmm. it's a dwelling, but other than that, they've been pretty open about the whole idea,
fabulous.
And also in Fellsmere. Fellsmere is another spot that's a little further south from here, about 20 miles south of the Kennedy Space Center.
So, yeah. Jody, you give speeches.
Where Braveheart is over there, too. Braveheart is another community. I think she's in the Fort Lauderdale area. She's at the forefront of building tiny house communities in Florida. That's another one you can take.
Well, Jody, you know what? One other thing is, too, that somebody asked me about was the safety. When you pull up to the places where you can park your home and there's other people there in the park, and you know, in our country, we do have people that you have to be careful. It has to be pet friendly and all that. Do they screen the people who want to live in these tiny homes in a community?
I was building a community, it would be my rules, right? I'm the person who's going to decide what the factor is for moving in. We're going to get along. These are going to be the rules. You know, can this work for you? Great. Then you'll get an invite. I don't want to have 100 people. I want to have a half a dozen people living with me. So that's an easy thing to filter on your own, right? But we're not going to be moving them around. They're going to be mobile if they need to move them, but they're looking for a long-term parking space where they can take the tires off, maybe plant it for a little bit, but if they have to move it, put the tires back on and take it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
we've seen a lot of I've seen personally a lot of health professionals that are kind of PRN, they're traveling nurses or traveling doctors, and they're putting them on like semi-trailer hauls, and then they just drive a truck or drive something in front, and then they leave it off wherever they are, but self-stabilization, and then this gives them the opportunity to not have to, you know, go travel and again stay in a hotel.
Yeah, and you know what's a beautiful thing about this tiny home community too? It's almost like the old days where you could barter stuff, right? You have oranges, I have eggplants. You know, you have a big screen television, but I have music here. And before you know it, I do feel like these smaller communities with like-minded people. I tend to think you would have less depression. You probably will have people walking a lot more, less stroke, like we're going to be talking about strokes. I think it's good for people's overall health because health is the new wealth, right? And Jody, you have done something wonderful to start the conversation with over 3 million views on TikTok and people loving your idea. So give our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a website, or how can someone contact you if they would like you to come and give a speech or give people some ideas? Because, I mean, it's refreshing to have someone that cares not only about themselves but others.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't have a website yet. I am in the process of changing all of that. I'm just very quickly tell you, I'm leaving the country next week for a 6-month stint to put my head down and get to work someplace where it's cheaper for me to live while I'm putting a plan together, because it's too expensive for me to live here. I don't have a website yet, but you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube under I am Jody Brown, J-O-D-I, Brown like the color. And if they want to send me an email, they can send me an email at iamjodybrown.tv@gmail.com.
Where are you going for 6 months? Trinidad and Tobago or the Caribbean?
No,
okay, because if
I'm
you
going,
do, I know
I'm close,
people.
I'm close. I'm going to a little seaside village in Colombia, right next to Santa Marta. It's a little town called Taganga. I have a friend that built a hostel there 25 years ago, and he has invited me to come down and spend some time there. So I'm going down there to put a plan together because I can't afford to do it here.
You are the fifth person who told me that they went to Colombia because the American dollars mean so much. You get more bang for your buck in Colombia. And people are taking their Social Security and they're finding expats and places to go, and they're doing pretty well in those places that have a community feel.
Yep, I may end up building down there. I don't know. I lived in Panama for a couple years, and I would like to go back there again as well. But this call from my friend said, hey, come on down. Let's just see if we can't get you rolling. So
well,
I said,
stay
okay,
safe.
I'm on my way.
Stay safe. Keep up with us here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we would love for you to call in from there if you have good reception as well, mm-hmm. and tell us what you're doing out in Panama or Colombia.
Okay, great. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and everything that you're doing for the community. It's all really great, solid information, and we need more of it. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise.
Thank you.
Well, and this show will be available for download within the next 24 hours on our websites and so forth. We're going to take a brief moment and listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super saving sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Join BABA Senior Outreach for our annual Senior Support Walk and Vendor Fair. We're gathering at Wickham Park on May 23rd from 8 to noon to celebrate our seniors one step at a time. We are honored to welcome our featured guest speaker, Dr. Visa Svensson, Medical Director of Health First Aging Services, who will be sharing her expertise on senior wellness. From fresh food and light housekeeping to our Adopt-a-Senior and Companionship Program, we provide essential support for Brevard County adults age 60 and older. Come out for their giveaways, visit our senior vendors, and enter your chance to win a $500 cash prize. Your presence helps us do even more. Visit babaseniouroutreach.org to learn more, and we'll see you May 23rd from 8 to noon.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
JotCoff.com.
JotCoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. JotCoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact JotCoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's JotCoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff.com. Call the professionals at JotCoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. Our show is heard all over God's magnificent planet on the web. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And Ellen, what a great segment about tiny homes.
That's right. Right here on 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button and you can hear us live and talking about all of these great topics. Of course, we share all of that on our website, cetamediainc.com, and on all of our social media channels under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
That's right. And for listeners who are tuning in for the first time to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, I am Sita Begee. We've been on air for over 15 years. And we just give folks a platform to talk about whatever they want to talk about on our show to make the world a better place and leave this planet a better place than we found it. And of course, you know, God always sends good people my way. I met Ann Moroz. We live here in Brevard County, Florida, but it took a gala in Broward County for us to meet up. And my friend, Dr. Diane Welch, was supposed to be sitting next to Ann. But I said to Diane, you stay with Sharon. I'll sit on that table all the way there. And lo and behold, I met Ann Moroz. And Ann is part of the Democratic Club, mm-hmm. right, in Titusville, and which was wonderful. And we are like-minded, which is easy to speak about healthcare and affordability with her and saving the planet and the environment and all the good things. And then she's a nurse. And so Ann Moroz is an RN with more than 40 years of clinical practice. And since this is Stroke Awareness Month, she reached out to me and said she'd love to come and talk to her listeners about strokes. So thank you. So give us a little background really quick about your expertise with strokes and what you know about them.
Well, thank you, first of all, for the invitation. And it's so important when you're looking at special months for different health conditions. And stroke is near to and dear to my heart for the past 20 years. Since about 2004, I was first recruited by the American Heart Association to introduce a quality improvement program, which is called Get With The Guidelines, and to assist hospitals to set up stroke centers in all of South Florida. And during that time, there weren't that many stroke centers, period, maybe two. And now we have stroke centers throughout the state of Florida through this initiative from the American Heart Association. Cardiac led, and then stroke came next. You're looking at the cardiovascular system, and that's part of you have the heart and the brain. You have one vascular system that is affected.
Yeah. And you know, it's amazing that people will go to their primary care physician, those who have health insurance, those who have the time, and they will talk about the GI tract. They will talk about maybe they're depressed. They'll talk about losing weight. But a lot of people miss that one question to say, I'd like to get an EKG. or, you know, maybe my blood pressure is a little high. Let's talk about signs and symptoms of a stroke. We all know, we used to watch the sitcom when Fred Sanford would hold his heart and say, "I'm coming, he had a heart attack." Well, heart attacks, strokes, hypertension, they all go hand in hand. So talk to us a little bit about the use of the acronym BFAST, because I think that's amazing how the American Heart Association has that. Talk to us about each one of them.
Well, in comparison with having a heart attack, we call it a brain attack. And we get teams together, just like you have chest pain, for instance, coming into a hospital emergency room. We have a team now that is for stroke alerts, what we call, which is responding to a brain attack. And the BFAST, just think, it's an easy acronym. It used to be FAST, but then it got changed to BFAST. And it's B for balance, and that, and also we're looking at anything that's sudden. If it's sudden. So all in a moment, as I'm sitting here and you see, oh, that you don't look too good, that's sudden. If you've had something for a long time, then it could be something else. So the B is balance. The second is eyes. And the F is face. The A is arms. The S is speech. And then time, because time counts. And we now have medications that can help to lessen the symptoms of a stroke that we didn't have 20 years ago. And we have even newer medications than we had a number of years ago, in which we can, if you get to the hospital in time, so we have time restraints, just like going in with a heart, with stroke, we have, it's oxygen to that brain. It's a decrease in circulation to that brain. So we actually, and we're looking at time last seen well until the time that we get our treatment. So with stroke, we're looking at 3 to 4.5 hours in order to get a life-saving medication that's just not life-saving, but it can create less disability for that potential stroke.
Right, and that's what we're looking for, is a good outcome, mm-hmm. Right? So really quick, when someone says, what is a stroke? And you've been doing this for a long time. What is your definition for them to talk about disrupted blood flow and all that? Mm-hmm.
Well, there are different types of stroke.
Right.
And think of it in layman's terms that your vasculature is your plumbing system. So we're looking at the majority of stroke, which is about 85% of stroke, is an ischemic stroke, or it's a clot that's blocking.
That's the one that Fred Sanford used to have. You could tell the way he did it, ischemic.
Right. And then the next type of stroke, and that can be caused by a blood clot. It could be like from a cholesterol in your system and it's a clot, or it could be an embolic event, which is caused from the heart. It's atrial fibrillation. And on the TV all the time, you see these commercials about treating atrial fibrillation. Well, atrial fibrillation is a major cause of stroke, and that's one risk factor that if you can control atrial fibrillation, you can greatly decrease your chances of a stroke. The next type of stroke is a hemorrhagic type stroke, and that is either an intracerebral hemorrhage. So, okay, so we're the plumber. We're come in and find out, okay, so the ischemic stroke is the clot that's blocking the pipe. And then the hemorrhagic stroke is, I have high blood pressure, and we're putting pressure on that pipe, and what happens? It could rupture. That's your hemorrhagic stroke.
Right.
And then there is another type of hemorrhagic stroke, which is called a subarachnoid hemorrhage. And that is generally caused when you have a pre-existing aneurysm that ruptures. And a lot of times that can be hereditary. You may not even know you have it until another family member might have a rupture. And that is an extremely serious stroke, and about 50% of those patients don't make it to the hospital with a rupture of an aneurysm.
Yes, and you know, often when you see patients and they say, I've had a stroke, then they try to add in, well, it was a mini stroke, but it's just as dangerous.
Right.
Right.
And then that's the third kind of stroke. Yeah. It's the mini stroke or the transient ischemic attack. I think I got all that pronunciation.
Yeah. Right. Well, to them, it's like, well, it was not so bad. You know, I got my, I'm able to walk again and talk, and the facial drooping went away, and I could see. But still, you have to be careful.
Yeah, and think about a hose. And if you step on that hose, you're going to have decreased flow. Well, that's how you think about an ischemic transient ischemic attack. Or the TIA, as we call it. So you have that temporary lack of blood flow from a temporary blockage. And then as soon as you step off, you have your full flow. Well, that can happen in the brain from factors in your brain. And that is a warning sign. Do not think of it as minor, because you could have a major stroke within 48 hours or down the road. So if you have those symptoms, you need to take it seriously and get checked out for those.
So for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, this is National Stroke Awareness Month, and we're speaking with our good friend Anne Morose, who is a stroke certified RN and has specialized stroke experiences in the arena for over 20 years. So let's go over some of the risk factors. I'm beginning to think, Anne, that they should have you stationed at all these bars and places where people eat, and you should be doing a video like our friend Jody Brown on TikTok, because the risk factors, smoking, high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, and so much more, which you will tell our listeners, they're all in those restaurants. They're all in those bars.
Mm-hmm.
They're everywhere. But people are having a great time. They're dancing and prancing and eating to their heart's content. But my God, their poor blood vessels, like mine, I have to be very careful with salt intake too. It's screaming that, hey, slow down, right? Because those are risk factors to strokes.
That's right. And unfortunately, being a woman puts us at a high risk factor, because we can't, our vasculature is much more delicate and narrower. So that we're at higher, especially if you smoke. If you're a woman and you smoke, you're really increasing your risk of stroke. But other things is like being pregnant alone. Some women experience hypercoagulation during pregnancy. That can put you at high risk. You mentioned about diabetes. That's absolutely. I also mentioned atrial fibrillation. And if you're admitted and get a workup for atrial fibrillation, there is a little, they call a loop recorder, that they can then monitor your episodes of atrial fibrillation to help with the decrease, to find out if you're at that high risk for stroke, and to also put you on anticoagulants to control a possible stroke.
Right. And so, and you've been speaking about stroke for a long time, and you're a nurse, you worked in the unit with it. Do you know, like, the survival rate for strokes?
It all depends on the type of stroke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have mild, there are mild strokes. And we gauge it per, we call it an NIH, which is a stroke scale. So when you first go in with stroke-like symptoms, the stroke team does this NIH stroke scale. And if you would have a zero, it starts, goes from 0 to 42. Of course, 0 is you're fine, but the higher it gets, the more risk you are.
Right.
So it all depends.
Would you say that
the
strokes then it can increase the risk of having heart attacks?
Yeah, you could. Some patients
get both.
Come in with both.
Yes. Right.
And sometimes you're not sure if it was the heart attack that started it or, yeah, that can be a challenge. And also some patients come in as a trauma. Let's say my husband gets on a ladder and falls off the ladder. So EMS comes to pick him up. Oh, he had a head injury. Well, or it could be any injury from the ladder, but a trauma. But we find out that it's a stroke that caused him to fall off the ladder to begin with. So that can be sometimes
hairy. Well, we've seen where people have an accident and they say, well, this person just ran into a house or caused this major pileup on I-95. And sometimes they had a heart attack and a stroke.
That's right.
While driving. So would you say that once you've had a stroke, you can have another stroke? So that's when
you're much at higher risk.
That's where treatment comes in. So talk to us about some of the treatments. And some people don't like to take blood thinners. And I know, oh my God, people hate to take Coumadin and all that. But they've got other ones now that people
can
take.
Yes, you have.
Eliquis.
The Eliquis. Unfortunately, some of the other blood thinners are much more expensive. Coumadin the problems with Coumadin, you have to get lab testing to make sure.
Which for the elderly, and I have to tell you, when they have to take blood out of an 80-year-old and a 90-year-old twice a week, it used to be Tuesdays and Thursdays or Mondays and Friday, that breaks my heart.
Oh,
and
yes.
That is one of my pet peeves, that when you get older in the United States of America, our government should pay for Eliquis and Pradaxa and all these things for the elderly. Really, they should. Because why should you be getting stuck 8 to 10 times a month just because Coumadin is cheaper?
It's ridiculous. And unfortunately, I was on Eliquis for a while, and I found out that my prescription, this is a Medicare supplemental prescription drug plan, it was exorbitant. Like, they wanted to charge me close to $900 for a prescription of Eliquis. And that is just so ridiculous. And I also found out, like, you have prescription plans like GoodRx and some of those discount. Well, some of them stipulate for some medications, if you're under Medicare, they won't help you with a discount if for certain drugs if you're under Medicare.
Yeah. I'm glad that you're speaking to us, Anne Moroz, about this, because there's so many differences between blood thinning medication. How does a person know which one is right for them? I mean, they'll speak with their doctor, obviously. But like you just said, you shared with our audience, our listening audience, it's not as easy as I'm on Eliquis once a day or twice a day. There's a cost behind that.
Oh, definitely.
And patients don't know that. And this is why a lot of them have to get stuck. And, you know, when you get elderly, you can't drive to go to the lab twice a week. That's a problem, to go get tested twice a week to see if your Coumadin level is up or down.
And the other challenge, too, is hydration when you're getting blood work done. And I found out this myself, and it changed my cholesterol levels, that if you're dehydration, and so many elderly are actually dehydrated or borderline dehydrated.
They just don't like to drink. I don't know if they just don't like the swallowing mechanism or that it's thin liquids, but we have that issue with so many people. But really quick, our segment is going to come to an end, and it's such a great topic for me. How can strokes be prevented?
Well, it's the same risk factors as cardiac. You're looking at, as we said before, with diabetes, watch your glucose control, smoking, people with atrial fib. It's all lifestyles, smoking, but high blood pressure is the biggie. That is one of the biggies, is controlling that blood pressure, especially when it comes to bleeds in particular. And don't think if you're not elderly that you can't have a stroke.
Yeah,
we've
seen
have
a lot
babies
of young people,
with
yes.
stroke.
Any is it hereditary
age,
as well?
It can be. It also can be hereditary. And also, the thing when it comes to stroke is, if, as we were saying, signs and symptoms, the balance itself, the E in the eyes, that means you could be having a, like, the balance would be cerebellar. And that the eyes, a lot of people go in and say, oh, I've lost vision or lost the visual field in one eye. I need to go to an ophthalmologist, which is really a stroke.
All right. So, you know, the other thing too, you notice is once you get into a hospital and you're diagnosed with having a stroke and you can't swallow or whatever, but that happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
You end up with a G-tube and a Foley, and then you got to be in a specialized mattress if you have a sore or a decubitus or whatever. Our country spends so much money once you get into a nursing facility. Everybody wants that face sheet because it's gold. That's right. You've got the fees testing. You've got therapy coming around four or five times a day. You've got meals coming in a big tray where you can't even eat. You need somebody to feed you. What happened? What is that? That's such a disconnect that when you're young and able to use the assistance, you have such a pushback. But when you get older, once the stroke happened, there's so many disciplines coming out of the woodwork, from speech therapy, occupational, physical. Then you got the doctor. What happened to us that we don't teach each other about the prevention of these diseases?
A lot of it is the modern-day stressors, too, and the money.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Absolutely. And the great thing of being in this field and what I've been able to learn is we have really made big strides when it comes to stroke care. When I first started, as I said, there were only a few hospitals that were really paying attention to stroke. But now, also with the work of the American Heart Association, we've been able to make it nationwide and on the world stage. And the important thing is to identify that you have a stroke.
The risk factors.
The risk factors.
Right.
They identify you have a stroke. Call 911. Don't sit on it. Don't think, oh, I have numbness and tingling and it's not, and you fall asleep on it, and the next day, it's nothing you can do about
it. Yeah, because you will be met by the stroke team.
Right.
Which will save your life. Now, really quick, I don't know if you could go through the five P's of a stroke. I mean, they're pretty tough ones. We could leave that question for a little bit. But, well, let's talk a little bit about family members and diagnosis. A lot of people say, my parents didn't tell us what diagnosis they had. How important it is for you to talk to your children and your grandchildren about what your diagnosis is, what your hereditary, because it's hereditary.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely hereditary, but it's also lifestyle. So the important thing is we can go on to also on the web with heart.org, especially this being Stroke Month. It's more education that the hospitals are. And also the importance that you're going to a hospital that specializes, has a stroke center. We have primary stroke centers, we have thrombectomy stroke centers, and there are comprehensive stroke centers. So we have hospitals here. HealthSouth has, it's Cape Canaveral has primary stroke center. Also, we have Parish, that's a primary stroke center. Holmes is a thrombectomy capable, meaning that it is a higher level of care. So right now, for instance, in a primary stroke center, you go in with your signs and symptoms of stroke, they quickly diagnose you. And if you're a candidate for a clot-busting medication, what we call TNK, they can administer that. But if you have a really large stroke and it's a complicated stroke, they may need to transfer you to a higher level of stroke care. So they may transfer the patients to, for instance, Holmes, which has an interventional, like a cath lab for cardiac. It's a neurointerventional lab. And they can actually go in and capture that clot via a catheter. And they put a catheter through your groin or through your arteria or your wrist and thread it up into the brain and actually can actually capture that clock.
If you go on time. And right. Really quick, exercise. Let's tell
exercise,
our listeners
definitely,
that it doesn't matter if you do two hours a day, but the American Heart Association recommends, 20 to 30 minutes of walking a day?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely.
Well, we will make sure we share all of this great information on our website and also on our all of our social media. And thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Make sure to tune in each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on 1510 WWBC.